Okay, good morning. Hello, everyone. This is John MacArthur, Peer Insight Moderator for Wikibon, and I am dialing in today from my virtual office somewhere high in the mountains of Colorado. We are joined today by members of the Wikibon team, including Stu Miniman, Jeff Kelly, Nick Allen, Bert Lattimore, and many others in the Wikibon community. Thanks for joining us. Today is Tuesday, March 20th, and we're here to discuss the rise of 10 gigabit Ethernet and the impact of Intel's Xeon E5 processor line, which was previously codenamed Romley. We have a guest today, McLeod Glass, who is director of HP Industry Standard Servers. HP just recently launched a server line, the G8, which is based on the Xeon E5 processor line. Welcome, McLeod.
Thanks.
And we're also joined by Greg Scherer, VP of Server and Storage Strategy at Broadcom. Greg, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks. Just a couple of logistics. If you are not speaking, please do press star 6 to mute your line. And if you want to jump in and ask a question, just press star 6 again, and that will unmute your line. So I give everyone a chance here, just real quickly, to go ahead and mute. Today we're going to be talking about a variety of issues associated with the Xeon E5 launch and the processor lines that have come out from all of the major and minor server vendors based upon the Xeon E5, and particularly around the impact of the E5 improvements on the adoption of 10 gigabit Ethernet. So, McLeod, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you first is, from your perspective, which workloads are most likely to benefit from the Xeon E5 improvements?
Yeah, so if you look at the improvements in E5, I mean, the areas that that have seen significant improvement are things like floating point and memory bandwidth. So the things that mimic kind of the typical benchmarks that you would see, like spec int and spec fp, and those types of workloads are benefiting the most. So things like streams, things like virtualization, really are seeing a big benefit here, as well as high performance computing applications. So see a big improvement in a lot of the traditional enterprise workloads as a result of this new architecture, with having the integrated PCI Express in the processor, having the integrated memory controller, which we've had in the past. But those things combined together are really delivering a powerful new processor architecture.
Are there workloads that are not likely to benefit from the E5 improvements?
So I would say, I mean, that some of the traditional workloads for what Intel has traditionally called the EX processor family, which is the 4 processor and up system, the workloads which are typically large database, single application, single image applications, things that need large memory footprint, because those systems typically have a larger memory footprint, those are still best suited for those that MP class box. So for example, in our portfolio, we have the HP Reliant DL580 G7, and we have the DL980 G7, which are well suited for those types of applications.
And from your perspective, is it that they won't see improvements, and so thus it's not worth the extra investment, an incremental investment, or they're just not impacted by the processor improvements?
The benefits in terms of overall memory footprint, the amount of cache size in those processors is still just much larger than what you see in the new E5 system. So those other types of workloads really benefit more in that EX space.
And in terms of then adoption of 10 gig E, what's necessary on the part of the customer to get the enhancements?
Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, we've introduced a new line of servers around this new E5 process, Xeon E5 processor. And one of the things that we saw is with this improved performance, you need a really good balanced system design and architecture to take advantage of some of those benefits. And one of the things that we did is we worked real closely with our partners like Broadcom to bring together a series of network adapters, and we call them flexible ROMs on our systems, that give you the capability to have 10 gig Ethernet embedded in the system and really allow you to open up some of the capabilities of the new Xeon E5 system.
Greg, you're on a call here with us today from Broadcom. What specifically do customers need to do in terms of the infrastructure to be able to take advantage of the E5 processor line?
That's a great question, because I think that what we're seeing is just over time so much more compute power being put in such a much more compact space. You know, where it used to take, mainframes to go ahead and get, 8-way, 16-way kind of servers, and now, every socket we have an 8-way server essentially that we're putting down, and the 4-socket and 2-socket machines that...
Greg, you still there?
Uh-oh.
I think we lost Greg. You, McLeod, you used the term balanced server,
yeah,
or balanced system, rather. Can we just talk a little bit more about what you mean by balanced system?
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at it, you've got to have the capability to balance out, whether it's the I/O capability in and out of the system. That can be the PCI Express, the number of Express slots, the amount of networking. Talking about 10 gig Ethernet, being able to get that information in and out of the system, as well as the right storage balance. And a lot of the great advancements that we talked about on our new ProLiant Gen 8 systems were around smart storage, and some of the improvements we made there with our Smart Array technology. Right. So having that right level of balance throughout the system really helps you take advantage of the improvements that we're seeing in performance in the Xeon E5 processor.
So, John, if I could jump in here for a second. So,
McLeod
and for the people on the call, this is Stu. I've put up on the Wikibon site a couple of charts talking about Ethernet adoption in general. And McLeod, I'm wondering if you could give us a little context, because what I've seen is we've been talking about 10 gigabit Ethernet now for, over a decade. It was ratified back in 2002. It was kind of a really slow adoption in the core of networking. And on the server side, I think we've seen, strong deployments in the Blade server environment. But we've been waiting for really this release, because this should be moving us to kind of mass adoption on the rack and tower environment. So maybe you could give us a little bit of color from your standpoint as to what your expectations are for 10 gig adoption in the marketplace now that we've got this new line of servers from HP and from all the other Intel providers.
Yeah, absolutely. So we definitely see 10 gigabit Ethernet adoption starting to pick up in 2012. If you look at what's going on, the workloads that are kind of driving that are virtualization, obviously. A lot of the big data markets and that are being driven by the cloud are driving more demand for 10 gig. And I think one of the real capabilities mapping back to the Xeon E5 is the fact that now to take advantage of that, you need to have higher bandwidth coming out of the system. You can get more performance in a rack-based system, and you can use, if you try and take advantage of that today with 1 gig, then you're really driving up the number of ports and connectivity that you have out of the back of the system. So being able to use 10 gigabit Ethernet and use the capabilities, some of the workstation capabilities that we've had with the HP Flex, the Flex 10 capabilities, to be able to carve up those NICs, to be able to do, to take advantage of those that increase bandwidth and performance without increasing the complexity and cost of having to manage all of those cables and ports out of the back of the system, it's going to be very important. I mean, if you look at our HP Blade system, that's something we've been doing for a while, and is really an ideally suited platform for taking advantage of some of these capabilities, with the fact that we have the embedded Flex 10 Virtual Connect technologies to help you manage and reduce a lot of the cost and complexity associated with managing that.
This is David Fly. I would like to expand on that, you to expand on that a bit, if you like, if you can. Clearly, the Blade systems have essentially virtualized the network architecture, and as you said, as a result of that, have led to a lot of simplification. Is that available with the Romley set that's being used for the towers and the standalone processors? Is that available yet, or how would you recommend to users that they should migrate to that type of capability?
So today I would say that the primary path for users taking advantage of that capability is within our HP Blade system portfolio. That's where, if you look at it in an ideal situation, from whether you're taking advantage of virtualizing the I/O, the most cost efficient, most effective way to do that is through Blade system. Today, on our rack and tower portfolio, we have the 10 gigabit capability that allows you to take advantage of the higher bandwidth. And over time, you will see some of the technologies that are in the Blade system portfolio migrate into our rack and tower portfolio as we move forward.
But they're not there at the moment, is that
correct? But it's definitely the direction we're headed, and something that I think is very important.
John and McLeod, I apologize. This is Greg Sherry. We had a phone failure, so we've moved phones and are now back with you.
Great, great. I don't know how much of the conversation you were able to catch of that, but you were saying I had a great question, so you want to continue with your response?
Oh, you bet. Sorry. No, I was just saying that I think that the new server platforms, especially with the FlexLOM capability and the modularity, really allow people to upgrade when they're ready. I think that the combination of 10 gig becoming more affordable from the infrastructure standpoint, looking at the switching infrastructure, the cabling infrastructure, kind of all in, 10 gig has been the backbone of most data centers for many years now, and now it's just being fanned out to the edges. There's still many servers that are not quite ready to upgrade to 10 gig. But the ones that are have a very easy way to do that with the whole FlexLOM capability. We think that... Oh, go ahead.
Could you just... I'm not sure how many people on the call are familiar with the FlexLOM capability. Could you just expand on what that is and what it means to the users?
Oh, you bet. So I think this is something that is really, a wonderful thing from the server side standpoint, and that instead of having to be all in and deciding up front, that you're going to put all your eggs in either a 1 gig or a 10 gig basket, HP has designed these flexible adapter cards that go in that they refer to as FlexLOMs, and you can choose to even upgrade later, or you have the modularity to decide when you're ready to, move from 1 gig to 10 gig. And that's a huge benefit in terms of, being able to configure your servers for the workload that you want, as opposed to, purely deciding up front that this server is exclusively a 1 gig server or a 10 gig server, because the capability is soldered down on the motherboard. This gives kind of the upgrade capability and the flexibility to move as the workload changes.
Is there an incremental expense associated with that, or is it net-net? How does that sort of work out from a customer perspective?
Yeah, just McLeod. Yeah. So I mean, it's basically just like if they bought a system with it embedded in the product, right? If they bought the server with it embedded in the product, it's just in the manufacturing process or the delivery process. Once they select the technology they want, then we deliver that within the system. It's also field upgradable too. That's one of the great things. That if a customer starts off with one type of technology, for example, 1 gig, and then wants to go to 10 gig, or they go from 10 gig in the future to some other higher bandwidth technology, they can do that from that system without having to change that system out. So it's a really great customer benefit from the standpoint of they've got that flexibility. Some of the other benefits from an administration and management standpoint is they've now standardized on a single product that they can take advantage of in different workloads without having to install different, you know, cards and take up PCI Express slots. It's actually, you know, they can have the same DL380P Gen 8 server that's got 1 gig or another one that's got 10 gig. It's the exact same box, manages exactly the same way, taking advantage of some of our great integrated, lifecycle automation capabilities without having to, essentially add on additional PCI Express cards.
I've got a quick question regarding the flux closet from Scott Lowe. Actually, is that two questions. One, is that a software upgrade or is that a hardware component? And two, is there an incremental cost for the customer to upgrade from 1 gig to 10 gig?
Yeah, so it's a hardware component, right? So there's some of our systems come with 4 by 1 gig, or you can get 2 by 10 gig flexible LOMs. There is, if you go from 1 gig technology to 10 gig technology, there's obviously a price delta associated with that. It's depending on how you upgrade it. If you buy it from the beginning, you're going to pay the 10 gig price for it. If you upgrade it after the fact, then there are options available, flexible LOM options available, to actually purchase and then replace the 1 gig technology in those systems.
Hi guys, I'm sorry. We're experiencing apparently catastrophic phone failure here, and so it's great to hear I'm back. We're on an alternate phone system. Wish we had a server phone system like a FlexLOM, and we could swap that out easily.
Well, welcome back. Sort of brings up the question of converged infrastructure and what that means from a management perspective. As we start to get more and more capable networks, what does that mean from a management perspective? Are there new tools that you need to manage a network like this?
Well, I'll jump in on that, and then McLeod, I'd love to get your input as well. We've worked very closely together with HP on a lot of different embedded management capabilities within the HP server platform based on ILO and some of the other management mechanisms. And, essentially what this allows, some of the Flex 10 capability of being able to take a 10 gig adapter and making it logically look like a number of 10 gig adapters or a number of separate individual NICs. And the management of that is all within the HP server, and it gives people a nice bridge, because instead of suddenly having one big fat pipe, they have a number of NICs, and those NICs can each be managed from a quality of service standpoint, giving them a certain amount of that 10 gig bandwidth. It also is great from a best practices standpoint. If you look at, say, virtualization platforms where they recommend to have separate NICs or separate networks for your management plane versus your hypervisor versus backup. And that gives you the same capability as you would have if you put in, say, a quad 1 gig NIC. It's just that you have fewer cables and a lot better bandwidth capabilities by putting a 10 gig adapter in.
Yeah, definitely. It's all of the management pieces are integrated into our management capabilities, and also interface into some of our great partners with some of the management capabilities there. You know, and some of the other additional things that we've done is, you know, have you heard much about HP Proliant Gen 8? Some of the stuff we talked about was our active health system, which is basically having data intelligence within each of the subcomponents of the system to help from a service and support and manageability standpoint. All these flexible alarms have that capability built into them to be able to help you diagnose and resolve any type of issues that you may have within the system very quickly, to be able to help you manage those components much more effectively. And all of that, you know, some of the other things, our HPC sensors, 3D capabilities we talked about. You know, we've got embedded sensors on all these flexible alarms that help with the cooling and airflow within the system to help drive a much more efficient solution as well. So, you know, in terms of the overall manageability of the solution, it's a very integrated, robust solution that that our customers can take advantage of, regardless of its 1 gig or 10 gig technology.
And John, you asked about convergence, and that's one of those areas where, you know, we certainly have seen a huge amount of press about convergence. I think what we're starting to see now is economics in many environments drive that as well, where, you know, both consolidation, where people are consolidating multiple 1 gig ports into, you know, single 10 gig ports, but they're also starting to look at their workloads in a new light from an economic standpoint and saying, well, how can I drive all those workloads on a smaller set of ports to make it easier to manage? And as McLeod was just saying, with all the great management tools that are, you know, now included in you know, certainly HP's line of servers, you know, we're seeing that one IT manager can do more, you know, with, you know, in these types of environments when he's got more CPU power, can load it up with more virtual servers in the case of a virtual environment, and manage it much easier. So it really is a case of being able to do more with less.
Do you expect to see migration to more blade servers versus upgrades to rack and tower servers?
I definitely believe if you look at the design and some of the capabilities of the blade system and how we are able to eliminate some of the complexity and cost associated with, particularly with on the switch side, and the ability to aggregate and take advantage of carving up those NICs and then also virtualizing from a virtual connect standpoint some of the I/O. There's a real opportunity here for customers to get the most out of this new architecture using the HP Blade system, and definitely they should be considering that when they're looking at how they're refreshing their systems.
We've got a lot of people online here. I just want to open up and see if there are any questions from the community here.
Yes, this is Dennis, also in Colorado, Dennis Martin.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, John. I want to talk about sort of the concept of backward compatibility. With previous versions of Ethernet, you know, fast Ethernet, gigabit Ethernet, you could put essentially the same pieces or pieces that looked the same in the systems, and then when everything else was ready, the upgrade to the speed was a fairly simple one. With other technologies such as Fibre Channel, they do the same thing where there's some backward compatibility. So my question is, where are we with having 1 gig and 10 gig sort of being interchangeable so that as you put something in there that can handle either speed, when the rest of the pieces catch up, then you know you just get the speed increase?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start, and then I think we'll let Greg talk a little bit about it. But I mean, I think one of the early challenges with moving from 1 gig to 10 gig is, you know, one gig base T versus FFP plus connectors on the system itself, and that upgradeability story of customers being able to start with one and move to the other when they get ready to do it. I think over time you'll see more of 10 base T technology within our portfolio as well. basically when it makes sense from a, you know, from a switch port cost standpoint. But, and I think that's definitely one of the challenges of moving there, but the advantages from a power saving standpoint and driving a better overall performance and efficiency story for customers, I think, you know, what we're seeing is they are willing to make those trade-offs to move in that direction.
Yeah, and I'll jump in on that one, Dennis, as well. And this, I think McLeod said it well from the standpoint of you know, the blade attraction for 10 gig especially, because in blades, 10 gig AC would be an egress technology outside of the switches that are, you know, inside the blade chassis. But from each individual blade server, you know, there we're actually using copper traces over the backplane, so there is no 10G-based T per se across the backplane. So 10G-based T really is something that would be more attractive in the rack and power kind of environment. And you're right, 10G-based T is the only 10-gig technology that is speed agile and can downgrade to, you know, 1 gig and even 100 megabit. You know, and I think we're going to start seeing quite a bit more of that. The technology is actually quite difficult, and it's required a lot more time than I think most people thought it would. But I think it's now, you know, on the crux of you know, being able to be deployed a lot easier. There still is a power delta, and so, you know, for people that are specifically very power sensitive, we see a lot of them going with top of rack solutions with SFP plus in the rack and still using the twin axe or direct attached copper cabling. Where 10G based T is nice is that you can upgrade either side kind of independently. And I think we will start to see more of that deployment as time goes.
Yeah,
Can you get a little more specific? Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, when we run 10 gig and we run 1 gig in our lab, you know, but it's always a conscious decision. Is it going to be 10 gig or is it going to be 1 gig? We can't kind of just have it just automatically do it. So I guess the question is, when are we going to see a lot more on the, I don't know, interoperability between, you know, 10G-based T and the SFP style of 10G, of 10 gig versus the relative simplicity that we have with the other the slower versions.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that's certainly coming. We have, you know, I'll speak from Broadcom's standpoint because we have a large portfolio of PHY technology as well. And so from a PHY standpoint, you know, you'll start to see some very, very attractive PHYs and integrated parts coming from Broadcom in the not-so-distant future. I hesitate to speak for our partner because we've got lots of things in the pipe, let's say. But you will start to see more and more of that. There is still going to be that conscious decision, though, for probably at least another generation before, you know, we start to see power being more equivalent between, say, an SFP plus direct attached copper power draw versus a 10G-based T power draw. So, you know, there is a delta, as I mentioned, running 10 gig over, you know, the RJ45 or Cat6A cable. It does require, you know, feats of engineering that are almost rocket science, I'll call it.
Hey, Greg, isn't there also a latency delta?
There is. And so for people that are specifically latency conscious, kind of built in, there's about a 2 microsecond latency per receiver hop. And that's just the physics of it. Now, this has to do with the forward error correction that's necessary and the buffering that's necessary. So for, again, for some environments that are very latency-centric, they'll probably stay with other technologies beyond or besides 10G-based T. That's really a function of the PAM-16 encoding mechanism that 10G-based T requires.
Okay, so Greg, this is Stu, just to make sure I'm following everything here. So today, 10G-based T, the pros are you're going to be able to support 1 gig and 10 gig with the same kind of cabling and upgrade one side and then the other, you know, kind of kind of fits into those billions of ports of existing cabling infrastructure, but the cons are today it's a higher power and a little bit higher latency, and it's, you know, at least Broadcom saying it's at least you know, kind of another generation before you would expect significant adoption of that technology. Is that a fair statement?
I probably misspoke there in terms of the significant adoption. I think is really dependent upon the environment. I think for environments that value, say, speed agility more so than, you know, a little bit extra latency and the power penalty. The power penalty is a few watts, you know, 2, 3, 4 watts maximum delta between on a per port basis. And so for people that value that speed agility more, I think we're going to start to see adoption pick up this year. You know, we're kind of forecasting a big uptick in 10G-based speed sales. You know, in environments that, again, you know, value that benefit of the cabling, the speed agility, and being able to upgrade either side independently. There's other environments, however, though. This is like the very latency-centric, say, HPC-type environment. We think that they're probably permanently going to stay away from 10G-based TE and be much more apt to adopt kind of the top-of-rack direct-attached cabling or twin-act kind of cable. And so we think going forward, unlike what we saw, what we've seen in previous generations where, you know, 10, 100, and then 100 to 1,000 to 1 gig, pretty much as soon as 10G-based TE became affordable, or 1G-based TE, it pretty much took over the world, including laptops. We think that there's going to be a split market in terms of the transceiver technology going forward, that there's always going to be a predisposition for people that want the lowest possible power and the lowest possible latency to adopt other technologies besides 10G-based TE. So we think going forward there will be that split there wasn't in the past.
Yeah, I would definitely, this is Cloud, I definitely agree with that. I mean, that, and that's, you know, really kind of the premise behind the flexible LOM design, because we do anticipate that, unlike in the past where you get to a kind of standardized technology, there's still going to be some level of fragmentation. Sue, the other thing I would point out on the 10G-based T adoption is switch port cost is another driving factor there. So with the switch port cost still being higher from that standpoint, that's also something that will influence the adoption of 10BASE-T and the rate of adoption, I should say.
Great, thank you for the clarification. And yeah, just to point out, when we've been talking about SST Plus, that has both the copper and the optical option, and we've seen a lot more optical for 10 gig than we ever saw in previous generations of Ethernet.
Right.
Can I get this back to advice for users in their particular environments? So obviously talking about trends is interesting, but for users, can you give some examples of environments where you would, and the strategies you would recommend, whether you should be going to blades or whether you should, you know, which of the different options in different environments would you recommend would be the least cost and most flexible or fit in best with different environments?
Yeah, so I mean, like ideally, for example, in virtualization with being able to drive, you know, increased VM densities and being able to take advantage of the increased networking bandwidth and the performance within the system, blades would be very well suited for that environment. In an environment where you have a lot, you're connecting to a lot of external storage, very little direct attached storage within the system. If I looked at an environment where I maybe am moving a lot of big data, and really need the full bandwidth of 10 gig, need some internal, you know, more internal storage and maybe internal I/O, then I would be looking at something more like our DL380P system, for example, where I've got a lot more capability to drive some of the additional PCI Express. And one thing we didn't mention was PCI Express Gen 3 in this system as well, that's helping kind of drive some of the additional bandwidth out of the system. So it really just kind of depends on, you know, the type of workload. If it's more, you know, like I said, from a virtualization standpoint, I think Blade System is definitely a great solution, especially when you've got a lot of externally attached storage. Whereas on the rack and tower side of things, when you need a lot of, you know, I/O performance and storage performance by having direct attached storage and the capability to move large amounts of data in and out of that box, that's where you're going to look at being able to use the 10 gigabit technology there.
Yeah, McLeod, I think that's a great point. This is Greg again. You know, I think that we're certainly seeing a large rise in the big data environment. So this is, you know, Hadoop, Memcache environment, other alternative file systems that people are using. And in those, you know, they do have quite a mix. They need very, very fat pipes to go ahead and transfer their data very quickly, but often they'll use some mix of local storage or even local SSDs that they'll cache, use them as functional caches to go ahead and store large amounts of data, but then want to push that data out across the network very fast. And so, you know, those, we definitely see a lot of rack servers that sort of favor that environment. And I think that's where, you know, the whole FlexLOM approach is such a great approach, in that it gives people that flexibility to go ahead and choose, you know, what they need in what environment.
This is John. It sounds to me like the world of networking is getting more complex, not simpler, and that there's more advice and consulting that's needed in terms of helping end customers select the best networking architecture for their particular workload. Would you agree, or how would you characterize it?
Boy, I think you've hit the nail on the head in a lot of respects, but I think now what we're really talking about is that the network is really integrated into the system more and more. So what we're seeing is that, you know, where before you could kind of throw in kind of any NIC that you wanted to and use whatever workload, and performance was good enough, and usually the CPU was the bottleneck from the standpoint of what you could practically get through from an application standpoint. More and more, though, we're seeing that the network edge, where it used to be outside the server, is now being pulled inside the server. So that's where, you know, the capabilities become so much more critical of really CPU savings, integrating into the CPU environment, be that, you know, in the virtualization environment, say with hypervisors. You want more control over your quality of service, over how you partition that big fat pipe into multiple smaller, you know, pipes, that then you can map to the different applications that you're using inside that server. That's where, you know, Flex 10 and Flex Fabric that HP provides are so crucial. And I think that, you know, again, it's that pulling of the network inside the server that we're seeing, where, you know, it's CPU offload, it's memory bandwidth savings, it's partitioning of the loads inside the server. So I think you're right, John. Things are more complex, and to offset that, that's where the management tools are just absolutely critical now, because without that, you end up with a situation that really is overall more complex. With the advent of the integrated management tools, I think what we're seeing is that it's actually easier to manage because you have more visibility.
Good, thanks. Let me just poll the participants again and see if there are other questions from the community. And again, *6 to unmute your line if you've muted your line. Okay. When system administrators are looking at upgrading, before they upgrade rack and tower servers to Xeon E5, what are the factors that they should consider?
I think the key to taking advantage of some of the various capabilities here is to look at, you know, what are the tunable parameters that they can take advantage of to maximize the overall system performance, and you know, if a customer is leveraging something like server virtualization, then they should probably look at 10 gigabit Ethernet and the capabilities there to help eliminate some of the bottlenecks in the system. Each virtual server obviously within the system represents a physical server, and driving the appropriate network performance for that. With 1 gigabit Ethernet ports, they become saturated typically in that type of environment, and that's when you would want to really start looking at 10 gigabit to be able to help drive that additional virtual machine density within the system itself. With these new Gen 8 servers and partnership with Broadcom, we've been able to deliver some of those new capabilities for our users.
Okay. David Flora, you have any additional questions for?
I think I've asked most of those. Just a comment it seems to be more complicated. I think your advice on getting help in this area is necessary, and the tools that you need to manage this environment bring with them a requirement for education and a new way of doing things, and that's quite a lot of friction in the environment. So the one question I would have is, should people, there are new things coming, when should people actually make the move now, and when should they just wait a bit and just wait for another generation of the turn before they make this leap?
I'll jump in on that one to start, and then I'd love to get your thoughts as well. I mean, from a Broadcom-centric standpoint, we think that the time to jump into to 10 gig is now, especially because the tools are in place really to manage this with a very, very light lift to start. And that, certainly we've talked about things that sound complex, but to start out, you can do things very simply and map this to exactly what somebody would see if many virtualized environments plug in, say, two quad port 1 gig adapters into a virtualized server. That's sort of the default condition today, if you think about it, is they've got eight ports of 1 gig physically coming out of a server, and what the operating system sees, the hypervisor, is they see 8 1-gig NICs. And those 8 1-gig NICs, they'll map to different environments and keep that environment moving. Well, moving to 10 gig, especially with the whole notion of Flex Fabric and Flex 10, Flex 10 allows you to see a single dual channel 10 gig controller. It really is eight separate NICs that show up. So from the sysadmin's perspective, it looks identical to what he's used to. The tools, as McLeod has said, are all in place to where, the sysadmin doesn't have to see things much differently. If he chooses not to go ahead and configure the different quality of service capabilities, he doesn't have to, because by default, on the Broadcom controllers, they're set up to share the link equally. They'll give equal turn to everybody, and any one of those partitions, any one of those NICs could consume all 10 gig worth of bandwidth if no one else wanted it. If everybody was requesting concurrently, then they'd each share it equally. So I think that the idea is that the future is always unknown. So why not be ready for it? Because it's going to come on us very, very quickly. The idea is to have these agile and flexible systems equipped so that as these new workloads take over, and certainly we read about them every day in terms of, additional virtualization capabilities, big data, other things like that, why not be ready for it today in a very light lift using, Flex 10? And, McLeod, I'd love to get your take on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely believe, I mean, we obviously believe that it depends on the workload to some extent in the environment, but there's definitely a subset of the customers that should be taking advantage of the 10 gig capabilities today, because they're going to deliver the best, you know, capabilities and allow them to take advantage of this new, you know, Xeon E5 architecture in a way that they wouldn't be able to if they're just only using 1 gig. You know, and obviously we believe that there's, you know, there's different customers that are going to have different needs. That's why we've implemented this flexible LOM architecture to allow customers to take advantage of either, you know, technology as well as other, even other technologies like InfiniBand, which are available as well. So,
Dennis, I know on your website, well, and I think Stu has referred to it in one of his articles on Wikibon, but you've got a growing matrix of all of the connect and throughput and options that are available, all the cabling options, right?
Yeah, right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we want.
Yes, if you just go out to your favorite search engine and type in storage interface comparison, or just go out to our website and look for the storage interface comparison. We talk about all the interfaces, you know, Ethernet, Fiber Channel, InfiniBand, you know, all kinds of other ones. Basically what they are and how they work at a very lightweight level, reasonably lightweight anyway. But then we do go into connectors and cabling and all that sort of stuff. So we do talk about 10GBASE-T and SFP and SFP Plus and all that good stuff, plus connectors and diagrams and cable links and all that stuff. So that's a handy reference. It's actually one of the more popular pages on our website.
Now we see another interesting trend too, John, that's pretty interesting. It's more cloud-focused guys. Their goal is to have really fat and flat networks, and including all the way to the edge. So, you know, 10 gigabits to the edge, certainly a lot of the public cloud, biggest public cloud guys are already there. Several more are moving there this year. But their view is that everything 10 gig, everything is already converged, so they're pushing all of their traffic over Ethernet. And the view is that one of the ways they're handling the complexity is to sort of drive to a single interface. And certainly in the public cloud type environment, Ethernet is that interface. And I think, you know, we're going to start to see them even move towards higher speed Ethernet earlier than the rest of the traditional.
Thank you, Greg. That's a great perspective. Well, we're reaching the end of our time. As a reminder, this is John MacArthur. Today is Tuesday, March 20th. The title of today's Pure Insight is The Rise of 10 Gigabit Ethernet and the Impact of Intel's Xeon E5 family of processors. Our guests today were McLeod Glass, Director of HP Industry Standard Servers, and Greg Shearer, VP of Server and Storage Strategy at Broadcom. Thanks to David Floyer, Stu Miniman, Scott Lowe, Dennis Martin, and Kevin Liebel, and Nick Allen for contributing today. We will have 6 research notes posted on wikibon.org within the next 48 hours. Including a summary of today's call, along with CIO action items, technology integration action items, organizational action items, vendor action items, and getting rid of stuff. Wikibon is a wiki, so feel free to jump in to edit and enhance the articles. Just as a reminder, we will have another Peer Insight on April 3rd, where Mike Adams, storage specialist from Lighthouse Computer Services, will be discussing selecting data protection solutions for cloud storage offerings. Again, I want to thank everyone for attending today. Have a great rest of today and rest of the week.